the bar went from being like 20, 26 people on a Saturday night to wrapping the people around the block and like 450 people trying to get in the bar. So I went to work there within 3 weeks. And I was the manager. I was a drag queen. I was a bartender, a DJ. I did it all. And it was really cool. But at that time, what was really lacking was, you know, the arts. You know, I mean, we didn't have like a vibrant fine arts center like we have today.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome to the Dunedin Film Festival podcast, the official podcast of the Dunedin International Film Festival. In each episode, we peel back the curtain to reveal the journey from script to screen. Join us as we dive deep into the craft of filmmaking, chatting with the visionaries who bring the stories to life. Whether you're a cinephile, an aspiring filmmaker, or just love a good behind-the-scenes story, you're in the right place. So grab your popcorn and settle in as we discover what makes the film world tick right here at the Dunedin International Film Festival. Today, we have a guest whose life story reads like a screenplay of transformation, community, and the vibrant interplay of art and identity. He's a Dunedin original, a cornerstone of the community whose impact has reverberated from the streets of this once sleepy town to the bustling, colorful destination it is today. From revitalizing downtown with the flair only the arts can bring, to advocating fiercely for the LGBTQ plus community and the art scene in Florida, Gregory Brady has been the heart of Dunedin's metamorphosis. But Gregory's story doesn't end with his past achievements. He's a visionary, currently spearheading efforts to establish a permanent home for DIFF through a professional theater with an educational twist, aiming to enrich Dunedin's cultural landscape even further. Listeners, join me in welcoming a true pioneer of change, a man whose life work has not only painted Dunedin in bold strokes of inclusivity and creativity, but also who stands as a beacon for the transformative power of the arts. The one, the only, Gregory Brady. So Gregory, you have been in Dunedin your whole life. You're one of the original crew. So tell me what that was like. What was it like growing up in one of the most amazing places?
Well, to begin with, it wasn't an amazing place at the time. Actually, when we moved here, I was going into the fifth grade, and I was kind of wondering what I had done wrong, that my parents wanted to, you know, kind of bring me to this kind of retirement village. It was a lot of blue hairs, a lot of get off my lawn type of situation. Downtown was rather boarded up. It was kind of a place that you came through, not to, which was really odd. And that all started to change when I started my first job at almost 20 years old in downtown.
So it sounds like it was what we always expect and hear of Florida. The blue hairs, definitely a community where growth was not on the forefront of anyone's mind. So tell me, what happened at that first job? What made the difference when you were 20 years old?
Well, honestly, it was the gays. You know,
it always is.
Right. You know, I mean, guys, you know, the people build the world and we come and decorate it and make it fun and fabulous and bright lights. So there was a bar in town, and it was a hometown bar that had a softball team. And the night before it opened as a gay bar, January 8th, 84, the softball team went and burnt their jerseys in the middle of the field. And the rest for that bar was history, because the downtown was still boarded up at that time. It wasn't for about 5 or 6 years that the city decided to do a redevelopment effort. So in the meantime, the people that were coming to the bar noticed all these boarded up shops, rent was cheap, nothing was going on. And so they started opening the stores, and we had Kelly's that came about with Virgil Kelly, Sable's next door, which is now the Black Pearl. And from that was just like it bubbled up from there. And then all of a sudden we became kind of this place that people were talking about. We started the first Mardi Gras to bring people here. And it was within that bar that we did that. And the fire marshal actually said, you got to take it outside because you're getting too many people. And, you know, the bar went from being like 20, 26 people on a Saturday night to wrapping the people around the block and like 450 people trying to get in the bar. So I went to work there within 3 weeks. And I was the manager. I was a drag queen. I was a bartender, a DJ. I did it all. And, it was really cool. But at that time, what was really lacking was, you know, the arts. You know, I mean, we didn't have like a vibrant fine arts center like we have today. Those of us that were sitting around, you know, having cocktails and talking about like how we're going to make it better. Mardi Gras did well. Let's have a blues festival. All of those conversations, we kept referring to, you know, the one thing we were missing in the arts. We had a lot of visual arts and artists moving to town, but the performing arts were really sorely lacking. And I think, you know, one of the first things we started seeing was the film festival brought a lot of attention to that, right? Mm-hmm. But way before that, we looked at our city hall and we knew that eventually they were going to grow out of it, and it was a round building. So we kind of thought theater in the round, right?
Yes.
And we've started a group about 3 years ago. It's kind of grassroots, and we are, our goal is to have a professional theater that has an educational component that can be kind of a permanent home for deaf, which would be amazing and a great kind of marriage. And so right now we've got the business plan, we're getting ready for a feasibility study. We've been going around town and banging that drum to get the business owners, the business organizations, the chamber, everybody in our court to kind of sell this idea to the commission, and it's worked. They are really on board, and it's an amazing, fantastic thing that we're doing. So, you know, I've been a business owner for over 30 years. I helped to form the Merchants Association, and now I'm with the Chamber of Commerce and just kind of helping to keep the ideas moving forward, because, you know, growth is great and we're seeing it all over Dunedin. Now we're one of the most talked about towns in Florida. So that's, it's working.
It is. It is working. So there's a lot to unpack with what you just shared there. So let's go back to those early days at this bar. And, you know, there was 26 people that are going in on a Saturday night. And then you have 450 people wrapped around the building. What was that like? What were those first few weeks like? How did it feel to be there? And did you know it was going to be the success that it was? And did you know that that bar was going to turn around Dunedin the way it did?
I don't think anybody really thought of that aspect of it, turning the town around. As a 19-year-old gay man, you know, I was going to Tampa, sneaking off to Tampa, and, you know, late at night. And to me, to have a gay bar in my town was surreal, I think, at the time. And you walked in and the DJs were playing Donna Summer, and there were all these lights on the dance floor, and it just transformed overnight. And it was like our Disney, you know? And so we were just blown away. And I asked for a job the first night I went in there, and, you know, my mother knew the owner, and he was like, you know, you don't want to work here. You want to come here and spend your money. And I was working there within 3 weeks, and, you know, because I was very enamored by just the whole concept of it, you know, because at that time in the 80s, you have to realize that gay people couldn't walk down the street holding hands. They couldn't show affection having dinner together. And, you know, they couldn't go to the art galleries and show their work. It was a different time, right?
I mean, we were in the heart of the AIDS scare and yeah, just the horrific propaganda that was shared about that with gay couples. So, I mean, it was awful.
Yeah. You came out of the closet and then you went immediately back in. So,
yeah,
you know, it was, you know, we see in Dunedin, it's such a diverse community. And I think the arts are part of that in such a grand way, right? Because you have artists, a lot of those artists are from all walks of life, including the LGBTQ plus community. Mm-hmm. And there's always been acceptance between those groups. And so it's one of our strengths in Dunedin. It's something you go to other towns that are similar to us or like us. You know, I've been all over Florida, the South, even, you know, up in the Northeast, and you don't find that feeling of friendship and camaraderie and everybody supporting one another. And, you know, it's why we think of things the way we do. So, you know, the thing about that bar, what I noticed the most was it built a community. So not only did business owners, you know, come and open, a lot of them weren't business owners when they did open, they became them, but also people started moving to the area. So we had such a sense of community, and the downtown was just kind of getting ready to lift off. And so it was kind of kismet, because then the trail came through and that changed things. The art center raised itself to a whole new level with education and just really having a sense of ownership, because their building was growing and they were really feeling it. And we noticed theater groups that were, you know, kind of springing up around town, but they didn't have a place to perform and they were renting spaces, much like the film festival is today.
Exactly.
They have to like partner, which is something we've always done in Dunedin. If we don't have the space, we find somebody that we know that has the space and we just make things work, which is really kind of cool. But for the film festival, it started so grassroots. And now you look at today and, you know, we had this film that came to town. And these actors people recognize. I actually just ran into Martin Cove cutting off the elevator. And it's strange and surreal again, all over again. But it's because of the work of the film festival that brought this to town. So I think the theater is going to do the same thing. You know, arts are a destination and they also are economy. They are a driver for our economy. So that's how we kind of get the buy-in from our sponsors and all of that kind of thing. And the same thing was true with that guy back with the bar. Mm-hmm. He was a straight man from Detroit, looked like Bela Lugosi, never went out in the daytime. And his friend who was gay said, if you really want to make some money. And so it was economy to him. It wasn't that he wanted to be gay. It wasn't that he wanted to be friends with gay people. I ended up managing the bar because he didn't know what to do with us. He was like, you know, I just want to stay home and count my money. And so I was running his bar by the time I was 20 years old, and I did it for 8 years. And it was an awesome experience. And kind of it helped me cut my teeth into what I'm doing today at the Chamber, because I was meeting people in the bar and helping them find a space to open their antique store and their art gallery and their restaurant, because I knew everybody and knew where all the little nooks and crannies were. So it was kind of cool.
Being that original merchant networker and, yeah, and helping them see those opportunities.
Oh, yeah.
And then now to see the flourishing downtown that we have, the bouncing Pinellas Trail that's going with businesses along the trail.
Right.
You know, speaking of Marty, that was one of the things we were talking about last night, is he cannot believe he's on a walking trail and there's a brewery and a lobster restaurant, right, as he's walking on the trail. Yeah. And that's what we offer here in Dunedin.
It is. You know, they call it the heart of the trail because you notice when people come from other communities and they come through Dunedin, they come to the train station and they just start, the head starts pivoting, mm-hmm, and they look around and you can just see there's such a, I think one of our strengths also is the locality, like the fact that we don't have corporate box stores, mm-hmm, in downtown. It's very noticeable and it allows us to sort of kind of be who we are rather than who they want us to be, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
You know, so, you know, I had a salon for over 30 years. And after like about 17 years ago, this girl, Kaya, came to me from the Art Center. And she's like, I want to do this thing called Wearable Art. And it's about artists and they're going to do art for the body. Would you be able to do hair and makeup? And I was like, sure. It was me and one other girl. And it was like 10 models. And 17 years later, it was like 85 models. And I've got a crew of like, you know, 15 back in the back. But the thing that stood out to me was, and Kai and I had this conversation after like year two, I said, what we're doing is also wearable art. Makeup is art. Hair is art, because we're creating, we're using texture. We're using, you know, different colors and, you know, having to know the color wheel and just things that artists, filmmakers, and everybody knows. So there's this common thread. So I started demanding that my team got to walk on stage like the artists got to walk on stage, and that we were recognized not as the hair and makeup team, but as one of the artists. So it was really kind of cool, you know, that they recognized us for what we brought to the table. You know, we were as important, and we actually sealed the deal. We kind of, you know, we were the chocolate mousse to the steak dinner, you know, we
exactly
were the finish, you know, I mean, they couldn't walk out there without us, which was kind of cool. So we did it. This last year was 17 years. I'm sure it's going to happen next year. And my protege that I helped her do a woman-owned businesses through the chamber, getting an SBA loan for women, she bought my salon after being my assistant for 10 years. So she's carrying the torch and still doing wearable art and all kinds of things. So the art continues in the salon world too.
Yes, it sounds like you have this unique perspective to tie what we do in everyday life to art. So whether it's at the bar and going from the cocktails that you curate to the DJ music to the drag shows and just really bringing art into this bar and community, bringing that into the salon and really showing the world that there's art in everything that we do.
Yes, because you never know what you're going to learn. Like I was taught by a drag queen when I was about 17 years old, how to do makeup on my face. And I took that and taught myself to do makeup on other people. And so I never knew that that was why I was learning it. But number one, you know, doing drag made me a lot of money. So I was able to buy my salon.
Exactly.
But also I learned color, texture, blending, and all the things that artists use, you know. And so that's why it just kept recurring to me that this is art that you're doing. And, you know, drag, I mean, especially when you look at today, the money that it brings in, but not only that, but just the creativity that is involved in that art, from dance to makeup to costumes and, you know, color and texture and live voices. And it's just amazing to me, you know, what we used to do behind closed doors and in the dark is now so out on stage in the open. And now you're seeing it. Like, I've always appreciated that DIFF has paid attention to LGBTQ plus people and always integrated that within the film world as DIFF portrays it. You know, it's important because when you know about performing arts and all of that, you know that that is such an underlying factor, you know, and that is part of that community, you know, largely so. So it's kind of cool.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's just, again, great to highlight how life really imitates art. And then in the flip, the reverse, it can happen as well.
Right.
So, it's incredible to hear about your life and what you've seen and how you've seen Dunedin grow. And then now to this community that we have it, and to be here at the Fenway on Edgewater and being able to look out at the beautiful water and know that we're in this incredible town that is ready for change. Even if Dunedin doesn't know it's always ready for change, it's ready for change. And it keeps proving that to us.
It does. And, you know, they say that, you know, imitation is the biggest form of flattery, and everybody's trying to be Dunedin.
Yes.
In the areas around us. And what I, you know, I have a part-time, I'm in Costa Rica. I have a business down there, and I've actually walked the beach with my Dunedin Wines the Blues t-shirt, and three different people at three different times said, I know Dunedin, because we have a lot of Canadians down there, and they're from Toronto. But Dunedin is known when I go to New York. People know Dunedin when I go to Costa Rica, when I go to Toronto. So Dunedin has really gotten itself on the map. And I think the film festival is just one more key component. And then we have that public theater, which I know we will.
Yes.
It's going to be to the next level, even higher. So that's cool.
Well, in our last couple moments together, tell me more about the theater project. What needs to happen next? What can we do? What can listeners do? How can we really bring this to the truth in Dunedin?
I think support, you know, to get the word out. We do a series of dine arounds, dine outs, dine ins, drink ins, and it gives people the opportunity to buy a ticket, but they get something in return. We get everything donated. So they'll have a 5-course dinner, or they'll have, and we always have professional performances at each of these venues and things we do in people's homes, in restaurants. We're having one at the Bon Appetit up in the venue. So there are all kinds of ways to participate in that, to just get the word out, of course. And to talk to, you know, people always say talk to your commissioners, but talk to everyone in the city you can and let them know. And people you know in the arts in other cities. Elizabeth Brinklow, who is kind of our arts consultant for the city of Dunedin and wrote the public art plan. She's the chair of the board of the Dunedin Public Theater. So we are now 501c3. So anybody that does donate, it's tax deductible, which is always kind of cool.
Absolutely.
Good, you know?
Yes.
But I think that it's going to happen, but support is the key. And what the city always looks for and the county always looks for is our buy-in to get their matching buy-in.
Yes.
So, and you know, it could be that we may need to use a property or buy a property that is a city property. Who knows? So it's always good to know that there's that support on the dais of the city commission, because that's probably one of the most important support mechanisms that we're going to need moving forward. So, you know, we have met with like 6 different property owners. We have our business plan completed. And now the next step is the feasibility study. So we're almost there. We just need a little more funding to get there. And then once the feasibility study is done and we find a developer that is going to, you know, work with us on a property, then it's going to be capital campaign time. And so that's when the rubber will meet the road, right?
Yes, absolutely. If the listeners want to find out more about this project, is there a website or a social media they can go?
DunedinPublicTheater.com.
Awesome. And if they want to know more about Gregory Brady and the original Dunedin character, where would they find you?
Well, my phone number is written on most of the bathrooms in town. I'm kidding.
Perfect. That's where I thought I saw that number before.
they can call the chamber and talk to me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Hair Traffic Control. And they can find me there. Or just see me out on the streets. I do still go to Salon GW. I have a chair there when I need it. And I still have some clients that I can't seem to kick to the curb. So I still meet them there. Or if they're in Costa Rica, they can find me there too sometimes.
Look for the guy in the Dunedin Wine and Blue shirt on the beach. Right. All right. And that's a wrap on another episode of the Dunedin Film Festival podcast. We hope today's conversation has given you a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the world of film and the vibrant community of Dunedin that makes the festival so unique. If you enjoyed today's episode and want to keep the conversation going, please share it with anyone that you think would appreciate the stories that we're bringing to light. Word of mouth is the best way to help us grow and to continue to bring you fascinating insights from the heart of the film industry and beyond. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Diff Podcast for the latest updates, behind-the-scenes content, and a sneak peek at our upcoming guests. Your support means the world to us and helps keep the magic of film alive in Florida. Thank you for listening, and until next time, keep the reels rolling and the stories flowing. This has been the Dunedin Film Festival Podcast. See you at the movies. Thank you for tuning in to the Dunedin Film Festival Podcast, a product of Dunedin Film Festival, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit facilitating the development of Florida's Culture Corridor in Pinellas County.